and a good afternoon to you. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name's Jamie Waste. I'll be your host today on the program. We're going to be speaking with Carl Broderson about Juno Youth Sailing. Rosemary Hagovic and Peggy Metcalf will be here to highlight PEO scholarships. We're going to be meeting with members of a ballroom dance group from Idaho's presentation, Strictly Ballroom. They're in town on a cruise. And Amy Houck will be here with details about this year's Fine Arts Camp. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on KTOO News Juno. And if you missed the show live, it's also available at 4 p.m. on KRNN and online at ktoo.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Passamaquoddy and Penobscot tribes pulled their representatives from the Maine legislature on Tuesday. Tribal leaders say there's much tension in relations and that the state is not recognizing tribal sovereignty. Penobscot Chief Kirk Francis says there are a number of issues.
So it's everything from public safety, protecting our women, economic barriers, territorial attacks, and most importantly, trying to have an effect on our cultural-based practices and internal governing. And so the tribes are working very hard to overcome those things. You know, we do a lot of work nationally. We're represented by fine people that have extensive knowledge in Indian affairs nationally. We don't see much else like this across the nation, although there's plenty to talk about in terms of a lot of tribes experiencing this kind of distress.
There are four tribes in the state. The governor recently rescinded an executive order which had promoted state cooperation with the tribes. Chief Francis recently discussed the strained government-to-government relationship on the talk show Native America Calling. U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell is visiting the Riverside Indian School today in Oklahoma. She's set to meet with students and school officials and host a roundtable discussion. The visit is part of President Obama's GenI initiative to open up opportunities for Native youth. Other federal officials and two members of Congress are joining Jewell. The Riverside Indian School is a Bureau of Indian Education-funded boarding school. It serves nearly 700 students in southwestern Oklahoma. Jewell held a similar listening session in Arizona earlier this year. According to a recent White House report, Native youth have the lowest high school graduation rate of students across all schools. The administration says it's working on reforms to address Indian education. In Alaska, people from the Native village of Tayonek recently celebrated a donation of land, which was once home to their ancestors. The 160-acre parcel was donated to them by the Nature Conservancy. Journalist Mark Trahant was invited to attend the community celebration.
One thing that the tribe, the village, is really struck by is how valuable this piece of ground could have been had it been put on the open market. And so they're just incredibly grateful that they had this opportunity. The president, Al Guzman, talks about it in terms of a lost relative coming home.
He says the donation is a positive step forward.
This land return was done in such a positive way that it shows the good that can come out of returning to a Native community that doesn't have to be divisive, it doesn't have to be a contentious issue.
The tribe plans to conduct annual cultural camps on some of the property. A Navajo woman was recently honored for her role as a leader in state government. Linda Lovejoy was awarded this month at the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference held in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Lovejoy is currently the vice chair of the New Mexico Public Regulations Commission. She's worked in public service for more than two decades, serving in the state legislature and the Regulations Commission. She says a number of people in her life have inspired her career.
My mother, my grandmother, they inspired me with their determination to provide a living for our family and always having to face many, many, many adversities in their own lives, but they were strong women. They were the nucleus and the nurturer of our family and gatekeepers for our family, and they were strong, strong people, and they had the love for public service as well, and I think I got that in my blood.
Lovejoy also put her bid in twice for president of the Navajo Nation, running for office in 2006 and 2010, winning both primaries but losing the general elections. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to the program. Up first today, we have Carl Broderson in the studio, and Carl's here to talk about the Juneau Youth Sailing Season, which is, I'm assuming it's right around the corner here.
Next week. First class.
And if there's a little bit of time, perhaps we'll also talk about the Adult Racing Series. But the Juneau Youth Sailing Season, now for many years now, I've seen every summer, it's a sign of summer, right?
Yes.
Those little boats out there, and you know there's some of Juneau's youth in those boats learning all kinds of skills. So that's what's coming up. Tell us about the Juneau Youth Sailing Season.
This is going to be our 19th year. We've been around absolutely forever, and it's kind of scary to think how long it's been, especially for those of us who started with the program near the beginning. It's an excellent way to learn about sailing and things like that, of course, but mostly it's on the water safety is what I think comes out of it for kids. I mean, we're surrounded by very cold oceans and a lot of boats going this way and that, and I like the idea that we're teaching kids how to be situationally aware and how to be safe on the water.
So this starts next week. So do you already have – is the class full already? Or
next week's two half-day classes are full, yes. Mm-hmm. If you go to our website, JunoYouthSailing.org, you can see where space is still available. Sign up, read more about the program. A lot of the introductory classes are mostly full at this point, but there's still some space left, so by all means go and look.
So describe the day here. My understanding is there's an indoor class part of this, and then there's the outdoor class. So what's a typical day look like for somebody who signs up?
You'll show up, get dropped off, and we'll sit around awkwardly waiting for everybody to get in and try to make small talk until everybody's actually there, and then get going right off the bat with an introductory class. We have a video so that people can see what the boats look like ahead of time and start understanding what's going on. And the first thing we teach them is how to right a boat that is capsized, because that is absolutely going to happen all the time on the water. And then we go out and actually try it and do drills in the water. And if we've got a full class of 12 kids, that's basically the day, is getting through the swim tests and all the beginning introductory bits. But then the next day, we give a quick introduction to some of the most basic skills, and then we go right out on the water.
So experience required, or do you
none whatsoever?
No.
They're well and truly introductory classes. We have multiple levels, and they're essentially two intro classes, one for kids, 10 to 12, and then another one from, 12 to 13 usually. And for those, we have what we call junior instructors, who are upper-level students in our level 2 and 3 classes, who come back and sail with the younger kids in the boats and act as, a guide and also sometimes a conscience. You can do some crazy things with those boats and help them through the situations that they get into and help them learn quicker and safely.
So these are small boats.
Yes, they're tiny. They're Vanguard 420s, which has nothing to do with anything going on here in Washington or Colorado. They're 4.2 meters long. That's where the name comes from. And so, it's a relatively short boat, 12, 13 feet, I think. And they're designed to have two people in them, and they work really well with two youths, not as well with two adults, but we can still clamber around in there ourselves.
So on that first day, I assume there's some trepidation from young sailors here.
And
you've shown them, you've taught them a little bit, and suddenly they're going out on the water. How do you manage that? How is it managed out on the instruction out on the water?
We have two skiffs, safety boats, that are powered, and they don't need the wind, fortunately. And you coach from those boats, and you discuss the activity that's going to happen ahead of time. And usually it's, there's a buoy on this side of the channel and a buoy on the other side, and we want you to sail a figure eight around it for the next 20 minutes at least and just practice the skills that are involved in that. And then we can go on to other activities or skill sets. And it's a lot of buoy sailing. And then eventually we get to the point where it's – free time isn't quite the right word. There's always structure to it. But, a sail where kids can go out and start making their own decisions about where we want to go as a group.
Are weather, does it play, is there a role here, limitations
oh, yes.
on
oh,
going
yes.
out, or are you, do you always go out regardless because they can still learn given the circumstances?
Essentially, it depends on which direction the weather is going. When there's absolutely no wind, it is still worth going out because there's a surprising amount of motion that you can create with no wind in one of those boats. You can make them go without wind. It's just difficult. We have paddles. You can go out there and just paddle and canoe around, and it's still entertaining and fun. Going the other direction, if the wind gets too strong, we will change the plan for the day. There is a safety issue involved in that, of course. But when you've got three people in a boat for two, I mean, that's enough weight that you can keep them flat usually. And so we have a pretty high threshold for when we're going to call the day on account of too much wind, because that's the best sailing experience you can possibly get. But going back the other direction, when it's a flat, calm day, we'll do capsize races, which are actually really entertaining.
Probably
kids
fun.
Love them. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll notice if you look at us, we're extremely brightly colored. We're wearing dry suits the entire time. It's just absolutely necessary. And you have multiple layers on underneath. And so kids understandably have great trepidation about going in the water around here, and they should. But once we do a swim test on day one before the capsize drills, and once you get into the water and discover that I'm not dead, it's all we can do to keep them in the boats. They love it. It basically turns into swim class.
Youth.
Yes.
So I think most of the sailing occurs right off of the Juno Yacht Club. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes. We have a partnership with the Juno Yacht Club. They very kindly give us their facility to use as classroom space. And so we're sailing just right off of the point there from them. Occasionally we'll go south of the bridge, sometimes all the way up to Sandy Beach. Upper level classes on Fridays, we'll try to do an expedition somewhere and then come back and have pizza. And it's a lot of fun to get out there and cruise around.
And that area, I'm assuming, it also is just a pretty calm area. Even if it's really whipped up maybe further down Gastineau Channel, typically
yeah.
the conditions there are a little more subdued, right?
Yeah, a little more sedate. I mean, there's current issues, which
right.
I always think. Yeah, you know, you're sailing full out, and you look at the shore, and you're not actually moving because the current is rushing so much. It's also slightly less traveled, all things considered. We have very few float planes landing in that part of the channel. And
mm-hmm.
They like to buzz us now and then, it seems like, you know. They'll come in with a load of tourists and hey, let's go cruise right above this boat when we're out in the lower part of the channel. But just there are rules of the road in terms of who has right of way in all of these situations, and we very carefully specify to the kids and teach them how to know when to give way when you have the right of way, et cetera, et cetera. And then we end that lesson with, if anybody's in your way, you get out of their way.
We were chatting before you came on, and you said something that I thought was wonderful, that all of the instructors, or for many years now, all of the instructors, they're return sailors,
yes.
the people who grew up in the program and have come back to instruct.
Yes, we have a lead instructor and then three assistant instructors, and they've all come up through the program. And it's almost self-perpetuating in that way. We also do have a board of directors, which is a mixture of people who started in the program like myself and parents who are interested in it, or people who are just general sailing advocates who see the importance of it and want to make sure that it keeps going.
So it's a wealth of learning opportunity here for
yes.
for youth about the water and about sailing itself. I mean, there's just so many different things going on there that I can only imagine how satisfying it is.
Yeah, I remember. I absolutely loved it. And most of the kids in our classes are under 16, sometimes by several years, and so they don't have learner's permits for cars, which means that boat is the largest thing they've ever had control of. And it's an incredibly empowering experience to get out there and control a boat like that.
Real quickly, the Adult Racing Series. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. During a time when the boats would otherwise just be sitting on shore, Thursday evenings we were trying to start an Adult Racing Series. It's where folks who kind of know what they're doing will come out and race around the buoys with us. And if you have any interest, by all means, go for it. And honestly, even if you don't know how to sail, like, we can try and get you up to snuff. We do have adult classes now and then, but we'll do what we can to get people into racing shape. And it's an awful lot of fun. It's extremely affordable. And it's people express an awful lot of enthusiasm for it. And so we hope that it'll happen this year.
So for adults who might be interested, and or for folks who might be interested in mm-hmm. taking one of the final spots or two for the Juno Youth Sailing, how do they mm-hmm. get a hold of you? How do they find out more?
It's all online. Everything is online. We don't even have a phone number. it's junoyouthsailing.org. You can Google us. And from page one, it's, you know, do you want youth classes? Click here, read about them, and go from there. And it's simple and easy system. So as ever, Google is the answer to everything.
So regardless of the weather, I hope you have a great season. You may have an extension on this wonderful weather, but it sounds like it doesn't matter, really. The program will go on. And Carl Brodersen from the Juno Youth Sailing Group, thank you very much. Thanks for making it happen, for starters, for
thank
all
you.
The kids.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And thanks for coming in.
Can I give three quick shout-outs to
Yes,
Juno Yacht Club. Thank you. You're fantastic. Juno Community Foundation. Thank you very much. And hopefully Juno Youth Activities Grant, we find out in a couple of weeks. Thank you in advance.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 27th of May, 2015. It's the birthday of the novelist Dashiell Hammett, born 1894 in St. Mary's County, Maryland. He got a job for the Pinkerton Agency as a detective in 1915, which provided material for his later novels. His first two, Red Harvest and The Dane Curse, written in a hard-boiled style, gritty, unsentimental, a little cynical. It was his third book that was a big hit, The Maltese Falcon, in 1930, in which he created the character of Sam Spade, a loner, both cynical and idealistic, who in turn was the inspiration for Raymond Chandler's private eye, Philip Marlowe. The Maltese Falcon made into a movie three times, the second one, 1941, directed by John Huston, starring Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade. In 1931, Dashiell Hammett began a 30-year affair with the playwright Lillian Hellman, and it was their relationship that inspired the characters Nick and Nora Charles in his final novel, The Thin Man. There were six movies made about The Thin Man, starring William Powell, Myrna Loy, a heavy-drinking, wisecracking, crime-solving couple. The author Donald Westlake once said of The Thin Man, it was a sad, lonely, lost book that pretended to be cheerful and aware and full of good fellowship. And I hadn't known you could do that. Seemed to be telling this, but really telling that. Three-dimensional writing, like three-dimensional chess. And it's the birthday of John Cheever, the novelist, short story writer, born in Quincy, Massachusetts, 1912, stories about middle-class Americans on the Upper East Side of New York City or in the Hudson Valley suburbs. John Cheever once wrote in his journal, "I have been a storyteller since the beginning of my life, rearranging facts in order to make them more significant. I have improvised a background for myself, genteel, traditional, and it is generally accepted." He wrote in his journal, "I seem, after half a lifetime, to have made no progress unless resignation is progress. There is the erotic hour of waking, which is like birth. There is the light or the rainfall, some ingenuous symbol by which one returns to the visible, perhaps the mature world. There is the euphoria, the sense that life is no more than it appears to be, light and water and trees and pleasant people that can be brought crashing down by a neck, a hand, an obscenity written on a toilet door." His novels included The Wapshot Chronicle, Bullet Park, and Falconer. Here's a poem for today by Gerald Lachlan, No Free Lunch. The cat on the back of the sofa watching the birds and squirrels feed and frolic on the patio outside the sliding glass window realizes he is living his life in a cage only slightly larger than that of the parakeet. Courtesy of his loving themselves owners, who have bought his freedom from the pet shop or pound, he has been further relieved of the burdens of procreation and child-rearing while being afforded a waived tuition into what Buñuel nailed as the discreet charms of the bourgeoisie. No Free Lunch, a poem by Gerald Lachlan from Poets and Pleasure Seekers, published by Spout Hill Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Peggy Metcalf. She is with the PEO Chapter G here in the capital city. Here to talk about PEO, but also in particular about a fundraiser for the upcoming scholarship, for the ongoing scholarship program
That's
that
right.
you have. And Rosemary Hagovic is joining us right now, so we're going to let her get settled. And Peggy gets to start the conversation here. So welcome, Peggy. Welcome, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Good to see you both. So tell us about PEO.
Well, PEO is a women's organization that was started by just seven young women in college in 1867. And within less than 20 years, a college for women was started by one of those women. We now have 250,000 members, and we have given in scholarships and grants and loans and through our college, $235 million over the years. We have a college for women, Cotty College. It was been 2 years and now is a four-year college and is high on the accreditation list. All their professors are doctorate, well, 90% are doctorate level, and they produce women who feel assured and ready to step out. That's one of our philanthropies or projects. Another one is an international peace scholarship. Women from other countries come, learn, and then go back to use that knowledge. We have a continuing education grant for women who have been out of school for 2 years and want to come back and get their degree or go into something new or start a new career. We have a scholar award, which is for women working on their doctorate or master's degree. And this is a prestigious award for doing outstanding work, not only scholastically, but community and overall. And another award is for high school students, the Star Award. And that, again, is for seniors who are just really stepped out. So those are our main philanthropies. And then our chapter has scholarship at UAS and Juno, high school students for all three schools, one scholarship, but all three compete for that scholarship.
Rosemary, so how does somebody get involved? How does somebody get involved with the scholarships applying? Is there a process here that they
have
to follow?
Yeah, actually, we work through the financial aid office at UAS for the scholarships that we give through the university, and then run our own process that is very similar to the other high school scholarship processes that are run in town for graduating seniors.
And if folks want to find out more, do they contact PEO? Do they contact the university, the high school?
Or? Actually, we put the criteria in every year with the counseling departments
at the
high school, and we go through the financial aid office at the university.
But they can contact any PEO
right.
for information, and we try to put the word out.
And when you say contact any PEO, you mean any member of the chapter?
Any member, right.
Okay, and then just what kind of how much money are we talking about here? I mean, are these what's the scholarship range or the kind of
the scholarships at the university are in the $2,000 to $2,500 range.
Mm-hmm.
We give depending on how much money we're able to raise, anywhere between $1,000 and $2,000 for high school scholarships every year.
Mm-hmm. And these funds, well, you just said, depending upon how much money mm-hmm. we can raise.
Right.
So that's
yeah.
part of the reason why you're here.
Part of the reason.
That's right.
So let's talk about that for a moment.
No free lunch.
Yes, we have a wonderful whale watching opportunity. Dinner is included. And it's $75. That includes dinner and the whole show of whales. There's a no-host wine and bar, and coffee and tea and dinner are all there for your enjoyment.
And when's this going to be?
August 6th.
August 6th. So yes, this is great. August. You're giving people a lot of notice.
Lots of notice. We all have tickets to sell.
And many people have, maybe people visiting, and this is a wonderful opportunity for them to just sit back and enjoy each other and not have to cook mm-hmm. a meal and enjoy the show.
Well, we have so many things to choose from doing here in the capital city year-round, but in the summer in particular, so I think you're wise to get the word out early. So the fundraiser itself, the whale watching tour, is August 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to mark that on their calendar, please do. And if
yeah.
you're already interested in potentially buying a ticket, they would contact okay. you through yeah. the website, or how would you like to be contacted?
Well, there is a number or two numbers on the posters, which are going to be posted each month between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number that they can call there, or any member has tickets.
Now, how long have you both been involved with the organization, with mm-hmm. PEO?
I've been a PEO for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been more like 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. And how does one become a member of PEO?
It's an organization it's very open. It is by invitation, but it's not exclusive to any certain people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I enjoy most about PEO, is that our members come from a wide array of interests and backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a really very nice camaraderie that is enjoyed by all as we work together on these projects. So,
and all of the projects are about advancing, furthering higher education
for women
from high school on
right.
up to whatever
right.
adult level.
Right.
And this can be about going to college. This can be about continuing ed. I mean, it sounds like there's a wide, you cast a pretty wide net here.
Continuing ed, I'm particularly partial to the program where women can look at reentering the workforce
mm-hmm.
as they, you know, their lives change. Perhaps they, you know, are through raising children, or perhaps, you know, there's just a time in their life where a good career changes. Simply what's needed, and we like to help make that available to people, and it often requires continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing about Cotty College is that they don't want anyone not to go to college because they cannot afford it. So probably 90% of the students at Cotty are on some kind of a scholarship, and they make those available so that that doesn't become something that keeps them from education.
And the scholarships themselves, is this an annual scholarship? Is there a rolling deadline? Is there how does that work?
At Cotty, I think it's mm-hmm. individually worked out.
But here in Juneau?
Here in Juneau, we do it annually.
Yes,
that's
mm-hmm.
correct.
And is that, when's the deadline for, or when is that on the calendar? Is that?
We give the scholarship at graduation. But the process starts.
The process starts several months before then.
March or April.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, last question. What inspired you both to get involved with the organization?
Well, you know, I really do like to support continuing education for women. I think that is one of the things that most interested me, and just an opportunity to work in a collaborative way with other women in the community on like-minded projects. I think that's very rewarding and certainly something I have personally enjoyed.
Very good. So thank you both for coming in, Peggy Metcalf, Rosemary Hagovic. August 6th is the whale watching tour, mm-hmm. and I understand food is provided by...
By us. We're yeah. excellent cooks, I must say.
I can only imagine.
Yes, excellent cooks, and it's a very nice dinner cruise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this time of year out on the water
Another
with the whales.
Another cruise for a cause.
It is a very good cause. Well, thank you very much, both of you, yes. for coming in, and I hope you come back a little closer to August 6th so we can talk about
well,
it again.
Hopefully we can.
Yes, yeah. That would yes. be great.
Good to see you both.
Thank you.
My name is Bruce Van Dusen. I am the director at Polaris House. Every day I see people suffering with the health effects of tobacco use. Many will die of tobacco-related disease. My message as a behavioral health provider is this. Smoking has no mental health benefits, and stopping smoking is therapeutic. Talk to a doctor or pharmacist about quitting tobacco, or call Alaska's Tobacco Quitline 1-800-QUIT-NOW. You can succeed.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
And the music we were just listening to is from Dan Kirkwood, Space Country Music, which will be performed live tonight right here at KTOO downstairs. So if you're looking to hear some great music, it's going to be filmed for television, for broadcast as well. So check it out. In the studio, we have ballroom dancers from Idaho. I've been waiting all day to say that because that's not every day that we get ballroom dancers from Idaho in the studio. Sherry Rollison and Matthew and JC, thank you very much for joining us here in Juneau on a Juneau afternoon. So what brings 50 ballroom dancers from Idaho to the capital city?
We are a ballroom dance studio in Preston, Idaho. We have some competition teams, high school teams and junior high teams. And every year I take the high school teams on tour. And this year we did a cruise to Alaska.
So you're going to various ports?
Yes.
And are you getting off in various ports and putting on a performance?
Nope. This is the only port that we are doing a performance in. We've been performing on the ship and have a couple more of those on the ship. We performed in Seattle before we left at a couple of places, so it's been a fun and exciting tour so far.
Well, lucky Juno that we get to be the one place that you're going to actually get off the boat. So you just arrived today, correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
Tell Juno what's going on. What can they go see in just a matter of hours here?
We will be putting on a show performing at the Juno Art Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they're having the local ballroom group will be coming and doing ballroom dancing afterwards, having a dance. But we will probably be performing for 45 minutes to an hour, and that's at 6 o'clock over there at the Art Center.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited to perform.
And so Matthew and JC, you guys are obviously part of the program here, and why don't you talk about the program? What are you going to do tonight? What are people going to see?
Well, tonight we have a set of dances that we do. Every performance, and we learn those dances throughout the year, and we go to competition with those dances, and when we go on tour, we just perform those dances for the crowd and just have fun with it.
And when you go on competition, so you're based Preston, Idaho, I think
yes.
That's what you said. So is that competition that's just in Idaho? Does it go beyond Idaho? JC?
We go to a lot of competitions in and out of Idaho. We usually try to stay in the Utah competitions and the Idaho competitions. The Utah competitions are a whole new ball game, though, because Provo, Utah is the ballroom capital of the United States. It really is, and it's really cool to go down and experience that down there. And tonight we're also going to be dancing a few numbers that have national titles, so it'll be really cool to come and watch.
What does national titles mean? I mean,
we've gone to national competitions and won.
Yeah. So, oh, wow.
In first place.
That's a big deal.
It is. In fact,
pretty cool.
JC.
Well, congratulations.
JC herself, her and her partner hold the national title for a cabaret dance that they do, a solo dance that they do.
Outstanding.
A cabaret is a lift routine with, it's usually kind of a lyrical type dance. It's not really your typical ballroom. But it's really fun to create those pretty lines and be thrown into there and stuff. It's really fun.
So the caliber of dancing this evening is going to be quite high. And is it all high school kids that are on this cruise?
Okay. Yes, all high school kids.
Are you the coach?
I am.
You are the coach. Well, congratulations.
I am the coach, and I have a couple of other coaches that make them look good.
Mm-hmm.
And I own the studio and started it. This is our end of our fourth year of competing.
The two of you are high school students?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Is ballroom dance, is there a renaissance going on right now with younger adults with ballroom dancing? Because I don't remember it being around when I grew up. I'm sure it was, but is it something that's becoming more available to younger adults?
In our area, it is. It's, mm-hmm. it's very popular in our area. And, you know, with shows like So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars, mm-hmm. I think that helps create the excitement for ballroom dancing. And then it's fun when we have these young kids who they're in sports programs and other programs at the schools. So a lot of their peers get to see them doing ballroom dancing, and they think it's cool, so it just kind of continues to grow.
So for the two of you, or is this part of high school? Is this a high school sport? I mean, is this something that's a club thing outside of the high school?
This is a club out of high school. Mm-hmm. We're a private studio owned by my mom. Mm-hmm. But, it's not part of the high school, but we involve a lot of kids from the high school. And so it's a youth-based event.
So tell us about ballroom dancing. I think most people have an image in their mind of a certain kind of thing, but it's many different kinds of dances, correct? Tell us about the kinds of dances you have to learn.
For example, there's different categories you can compete in. You can do smooth, which is like the big flowy waltz dances, and then standard, which is kind of the same thing, but they're just a little bit different. And in standard, you don't break from dance position, which is when you're dancing with your partner. And then there's also Latin, which is like the samba, cha-cha, and those are the party dances. Those are the ones that everyone likes to dance. And then we also have rhythm, which are the other party dances.
Yeah. Personally, my favorite's the Latin part, because it's just the dance that you can kind of really get into and kind of just have fun with it. It's kind of like the party dance, and so it just gives you a lot of confidence in yourself.
But I assume you need to, part of the program is you learn all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And technique to go along
with
it.
Yeah, there's a lot of technique.
I couldn't believe what I was getting into. I tried out as a freshman. I'm going to be a senior this year. Holy crap. But when I tried out as a freshman, I had no idea what I was getting into. I thought it was like, oh, yeah, this will be fun. But the technical aspect of ballroom is so amazing. And just learning how to move your body in those certain ways really make you become a better dancer in all different areas.
So tremendous athleticism involved here.
Definitely.
What kind of time commitment do you, the two of you, have to put in? Is this year-round, or what's the program?
Yeah, it's pretty year-round. I mean, we have our main season from the competitions between areas of mid-fall to the end of school, so about May-ish. But it's a year-round event. Every day after school, I go in the mornings before school and after school for about 3 to 4 hours every day after school. So it's pretty time commitment, but it just depends on what level you're on. I mean, we're more on the higher level of things, so we have a lot bigger time commitment.
These two are. Mm-hmm. We have others on the team that, mm-hmm. that aren't.
Yeah, so it's just kind of your personal, like, how good you want to get. It's just whatever you want to do.
And how good do you guys want to get? What are you aspiring for here?
Personally, I want to be the best.
Uh-huh.
But
so you have goals here to continue as a career, or just maybe not as a career? I don't know how as a career.
Part of the plans for the future, I would like to go to BYU because they have one of the world champion teams for ballroom dancing. They have a very good program. They have the largest program in the world for ballroom dancing. They have over 4,000 students in their program. And so I would like to go there and to kind of advance my dance training through that and one day become professional.
Yeah. BYU, you have no idea until you actually see them. But they have several world titles, and I really want to be on their tour team and just be able to compete and to kind of look back on what I've done and know that I've put all of my heart into what I've done because it's my passion.
Yeah, dancing is one of those things that you kind of get into it what you put into it. And so just the more you put into it, the more you have fun with it, the more it's going to pay back in the future.
It's kind of like life, really.
Yeah,
profession or career track, and it's always good to have something it's critically important to have something you're passionate about, and clearly you both are. Sherry, how did you connect with Jack across the street here, the Arts Center for the Performance? How did that happen or materialize?
Well, I knew we were coming on tour on the Alaskan cruise and just started contacting people in the different ports that we were going to, seeing who we could, if there was anything we could drum up. And it didn't take long to get the phone number for the Arts Center and got a hold of them. And they were wonderful and said, you know, we can do something here. Mm-hmm. So it's been in the works since, I think I got a hold of them back in March. Mm-hmm. We've been working on it since then.
Oh, that's great. So why don't you remind folks again of the opportunity this evening for people to come down and see some ballroom dancing. Why don't you just describe it a little bit?
And as far as I know, it is what they've told me is it's open to the public. It starts at 6 o'clock there at the Art Center. I think they are doing a donation at the door for those that would like to. Then we will be putting on a show and then lots of ballroom dancing when we're done, just for anybody that wants to come out and dance.
How long is the show that you're putting on?
Like I say, we should be dancing somewhere between 45 minutes to an hour.
And my guess is it's all very fast happening, moving, wonderful.
We have the cha-chas and the sambas, and we have the waltzes and the foxtrots, and we have a few individual numbers, people doing solos, partners doing solos. So kind of a little bit of everything, a lot of swings, fun stuff.
And then you open it up for local ballroom dancing, but you guys have to get back on the cruise ship, right, at some point today?
We do. One thing with these kids, they love to dance, and if there's music going on, they are usually out there dancing to it. So I've told them all we'll have to plan on packing up and getting ready to go about 8 o'clock and head back to the cruise ship, so...
Sounds great. Sounds like a wonderful opportunity for Junoites to see some high-caliber ballroom dancing. So, Sherry, thank you for connecting with K2. And to Matthew and JC, good luck with your passion here. It sounds like you've accomplished a great deal already, and you're on a great track. So thanks for bringing your talent to Juno.
Thank you. It's been very fun.
Just been introduced, I do not know you well, but when the music started, something drew me to your side. So many men and girls are in each other's arms, it made me think we might be similarly occupied. Shall we then say goodnight and mean goodbye? Or perchance, when the last little star has left the sky, shall we still be together with our arms around each other? And shall you be my new romance? On the clear understanding that this kind of thing can happen, shall we dance? Shall we dance? Shall we dance?
So many wonderful traditions in Juno, and the Juno Fine Arts Camp for Youth has been around a long, long time. And Amy, you can probably actually answer how many years it's been around. But Amy Houck and JJ, is JJ your son?
Yeah,
or JJ's Amy's son. They're in today to talk about the Juno Fine Arts Camp, which is being held June 2nd through the 26th here in the capital city at JDHS. And I know that my two girls, of course, went for many years, as so many kids have over the years. So tell us about the Fine Arts Camp.
Well, Juno Fine Arts Camp has been around in some form for almost 40 years, which is pretty exciting to be coming up on that anniversary. And this year it continues for students entering kindergarten through sixth grade. So it's a great opportunity for elementary students to get exposed to all different kinds of art, from music to dance to drawing and painting, all sorts of things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to choose from. You can change from each thing every week, and yeah, it's just a great little thing to do in the summer.
So this kind of tags on the end of the school season, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's one of the first kind of opportunities for kids, for families who are looking to keep their kids busy and active and you know, having fun. So if somebody's interested, if they haven't already figured it out, how would they learn more about the program? How would they register, things like that?
Sure. You can go to junodance.org because Fine Arts Camp is put on by Juno Dance Theater. And so going to junodance.org will take you to our registration page and our description of all the classes. We have many, many classes to choose from. Students can sign up from a half day or a full day. And they can sign up for 1 week or the entire 4 week camp. So you can be flexible if you're traveling. You can come and go, and there's a lot of different ways to do it.
So how long have you been involved with the program?
This is my second year directing camp, and before that I taught for 1 year.
And so, and you do have an incredible variety of classes or courses. I'm not sure what you call them being offered. So all kinds of art and expression opportunities being offered. Why don't you just touch on some of those areas and.
Absolutely. We have some of our favorites coming back. Our students love cooking. That's one of the most popular classes, and that'll be back. And things like storytelling through dance is going to be around again. Spoken word, which is put on, it's a class that the Wishkanati board members from the Poetry Slam, they come and teach that class, which is really exciting. We have some new classes this time. We have Lily Hope teaching Raven's Tail Weaving, which is just an amazing opportunity. We have ukulele continuing, and polymer clay is new this year. Sketchbook, nature sketchbook, so outdoor journaling is another new one that should be really fun. And we have art of movement, which is kind of like our big run around and play art kind of creative games class. And we have others, you know, for kids who like to move around, we have dance. We also have theater games, too, which is new this year and should be a lot of fun.
JJ, do you have favorite courses that you've taken?
Yeah, one of my favorites is the spoken word one. You kind of get to choose through the group what you want to do. And in the middle of the day, when you're almost done, it's kind of good to have art of movement there when you're really tired to wake you up a little bit.
And is it all indoors mostly, or are some of these courses outside if the weather's cooperating?
That's right. Some of them do wander outside, like the nature sketchbook, art of movement. You know, any class has the opportunity to use Juno as part of the classroom.
And the instructors, how do you come up? Every year you come up, for 40 years now, you come up with a slate of dedicated, you know, instructors. How does that come together?
My absolute favorite part of the job is being able to work with teaching artists and get in touch with them and say, you know, if you could teach for 4 weeks, what would you want to do? And so, yeah, Juno is just rich with artists and artists who love to teach and who love to work with children. So we're incredibly lucky. And, you know, there seems to always be a well of more ideas. I always have new people I'm thinking of, you know, this person I really want to get them to teach next year. So, yeah, we're incredibly lucky.
They're all doing it as volunteers?
No, that's the other great thing is I get to pay them, too. So these are, you know, professional artists, and they're getting paid to teach for Fine Arts Camp. And we also hire teen assistants to work with the artists as camp counselors. They also get to kind of learn and be mentored by the teaching artists, and so they learn about managing a classroom, they learn about presenting and teaching creative projects. And for some of them, it's their first job. For some of them, came through camp themselves, and it's a really great opportunity, a work opportunity for kids.
I've lost contact a little bit about the art as curriculum in the schools these days. I don't know if it's shrinking, if there's less opportunity as compared to the old days. And if that's the case, I would think this is just a wonderful opportunity for parents to get their kids immersed in art.
Yeah, I think there's less and less formal art instruction outside of, you know, the regular classroom hours where you just go and take an art class, you know, especially at the elementary level. But there seems to be more of, you know, schools bringing in teaching artists to work with kids. And those are some of the great folks that we have coming to teach at camp this summer.
So, JJ, do your friends come with you?
Some of them, and it's a great place to meet new friends. I have a lot of friends that I only see when I go to camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's... friends come, you get to meet new friends.
Uh-huh.
Do you normally do the full day, or do you do half days?
I do the full day because if you have a person who, if you have a parent who does the job, you get to do the whole camp free.
As it should be. What a deal. So
yeah.
Do you bring your lunch? Is that part of it?
Yes, you bring your own lunch, and you have about a 30 to 45 minute lunch, something like that. And that's really fun. You can eat your lunch, and then you have a couple minutes just to play around.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have counselors and teachers doing games at lunch and things like that, too. So
Amy, each year you're faced with figuring out the overall, all of the different courses. How does that process work for you or for your predecessors?
Well, you know, I start with talking to the teachers and finding out who wants to come back and what new people we're going to use. And then basically I want to be able to offer a certain number of classes per hour for all of the age groups. So we have three different age groups. We have K-1, 2-3, and 4-6, and they each need to have a couple of choices. Really, three is what we ended up with this time per hour. So it's a lot of kind of juggling and seeing what goes together. And, you know, maybe we don't want to put Glee right next to, you know, another music class because we don't want those to necessarily compete with one another. You know, so, you know, it's just thinking about things like that.
So is Glee popular?
Glee is new. So
Glee
it'll be
new?
Exciting, yeah,
oh.
To see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so what happens if you have too many people wanting the same course? Is
well, luckily with 4 weeks, it seems to kind of work out, right? You know, our classes, our camp is always well enrolled, but they're, you know, it's not full. There's definitely room for more kids to come and sign up.
And that's the percussions. He's practicing his musical aspirations already over there. So, JJ, if you were going to try to talk one of your friends into coming to the camp with you, what would you tell him?
I would say, well, it's a great chance to meet loads of people, loads of fun people, and there's probably a lot of people that you know that are already going. And it's just a really fun place to have fun during the summer.
Amy, we're kind of coming to the end here. Was there anything else that you wanted to make sure you were able to talk about? So we're talking about the Juno Fine Arts Camp, which
mm-hmm.
is coming up June 2nd through the 26th. I assume there's still openings available?
There are still openings. And, you know, if you've already, if it's too late for you to think about planning it for week one, you don't have to do the whole time. You can sign up for any given week during the month of June. So
mm-hmm.
that's pretty great.
So for parents who want to learn more, find out more, and or register, one more time. Where
JunoDance.org.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, or you can contact the Juno Dance Theater office if you want to ask questions.
Well, 40 years or close to 40 years or whatever, congratulations on that, and good luck with the upcoming camp. And, JJ, I know you're going to have a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for coming in.
This October, voters will elect assembly and school board members. I'm Mark Wheeler, and I served in the Assembly from 2000 to 2005. Holding that office was a life-changing experience. You can do it, too. Come to a free workshop on how to run for election on Saturday, June 6th. Register at junolwv.org. Space is limited, so don't wait. There's no better way to give back to our community than serving in public office. Brought to you by CBJ and the League of Women Voters.
And taking a quick look at the weather forecast, they're saying there may be some more rain here today, but definitely going to be drying back up, turning to mostly cloudy tomorrow, and it looks like, you know, partly cloudy, sunny in the future. So if you like sun, it's a good forecast. Maybe a little bit more rain here, but more sun coming too.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and